streaming 24/7. This is Radio Influence.
He got him in the white trunks. He heard him.
That's beautiful. Oh, God. That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the top. Wow. And here's Lucas and Mitchell. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich
one
Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
It wasn't that long ago that I was talking about one of the stories in MMA that I was really paying attention to was the relationship between promoter and fighter. Could that relationship get better in 2017? Well, we always talk about that with the UFC, but this week on the MMA Report podcast, we're going to talk about the fighter relationship with a fighter in the Professional Fighters League. Welcome in to the MMA Report podcast right here on RadioInfluence.com. Of course, I am Jason Fuller, along with talking about that story. We've got a big lineup of guests come here on this week's edition of the podcast. We're going to talk to three fighters who are fighting on Saturday night in San Jose at Bellator 183. We will talk to one of the men that's going to be the main event of that fight card, Patricky Pitbull, who is taking on Benson Henderson in a big lightweight matchup. We will talk to Patricky about that fight and also get Patricky to respond to something Benson Henderson said on this podcast last week where Benson Henderson called Patricky Pitbull flat-footed. So we'll hear what Patricky has to say about that. Also, we're going to be joined by Lorenz Larkin, who is going to be taking on Paul Daly. First off, who doesn't love that fight? That's a fight that should absolutely deliver. Also, we're going to chat with Justin Lin, of course, taking on Aaron Pico. We heard Aaron on the podcast last week, so we'll let you find out a little bit about who Justin Lin is. Also, we are going to be joined by Cody Stamann, who is going to be fighting at UFC 216 against Tom Dukenwall. I had a chance to catch up with him. Also, we're going to be joined by Caleb Williams. He is a fighter out of American Top Team in Coconut Creek, Florida. So we'll talk to him about what has been going on with him, how he dealt with Hurricane Irma, how some of his teammates dealt with it, and his fight coming up here at Battleground on October the 21st. And our final interview is going to be with the newest member of the Bellator roster, and that is Anna Hulatin, who she recently just signed with the promotion. She's going to have her debut. We don't know when that debut is going to take place, so we'll talk to her about what's going on. Also, talk to her about her transition from boxing to mixed martial arts. But of course, we are brought to you by Fight TV. Fight is the go-to app for MMA fans and practitioners. Live pay-per-views, TV tapings, full-length matches, interviews, movies, and documentaries. Fight is your number one source for all things fighting. Watch MMA, wrestling, and boxing live on the screen of your choice, phone, tablet, or TV using just the Fight app. You can download Fight free today by going to fightfite.tv/radioinfluence/. Once again, that is fightfite.tv/radioinfluence/. That link is also available on radioinfluence.com. Coming up this weekend on Fight on Saturday, early Saturday morning, 3 a.m. Eastern time for free. They will have Road FC 42. Also free on Saturday will be ACB 70. Going to be headlined by Luke Barnett and Scott Askham. And don't forget, coming up on October 7th, they will have UFC 216. Of course, that is behind a paywall. So be sure to check out all the events that Fight does have there on their app. And of course, download that app today by going to fite.tv/radioinfluence/. And of course, that link is also available on radioinfluence.com. But, you know, I mentioned right at the beginning of the show, you know, well, it doesn't, maybe it was a couple months ago I mentioned this, but it doesn't seem like it was that long ago. What's about fighter relations with the promotion? And primarily when we have that conversation, it is about the UFC and fighters. You know, rarely, you know, maybe it gets brought up with Bellator, but it has come up now with the Professional Fighters League as there was an interview done by James Lynch of MMA Oddsbreaker and Flow Combat. If you're not subscribed to James' YouTube channel, you definitely want to do that. James does a great job of doing a bunch of video interviews, so you want to check out this. So I want to play you, it's a piece of audio. It's 5 minutes and 19 seconds. It is from his interview with Flaminio Rama. Of course, the former World Series of Fighting heavyweight champion has moved down to light heavyweight. He was a part of the PFL's inaugural event in Daytona Beach, Florida. And listen to what he has to say and what he says about PFL president Ray Sefo.
We got to talk about your last fight quickly. I know things didn't go your way in that one against Hani Marks, but what did you sort of take away from that fight?
Man, what do you take away from that fight? They had us fighting outside and it was raining. And I blew my knee out and I had to get surgery again.
Okay, fair enough. So when did you hurt your knee in that fight?
In the first round.
Oh, did you? Okay, interesting.
If you can see us, you could catch us like kind of like slipping, and I let him go when he slipped at one point, then he let me go, and they just, man, it's unfortunate it happened. But I feel like I didn't get a fair chance in that fight because this guy wants to keep me on the ground, and when we're on the ground, we're like slipping and falling all over the place. And, man, it was a shitty. But I know they're not going to make that mistake anymore. And I'm not worried about that fight. That fight didn't hurt me emotionally, physically. I was fine. I outstruck that guy. That guy had me on the ground. He hit me 8 times the whole fight. I threw 50-something blows. I landed 46 of them.
Yeah, no, for sure.
What do you take out of that? He got 3 takedowns and landed 8 hits in the whole fight.
Yeah. No, for sure. And I think, you know, again, people see the loss, but they don't know sort of what's happened in the fight. You mentioned the knee injury, you mentioned the slippery surface. So, I mean, it's not really a good indication of, you know, your skill set or his skill set even, because it's just really weird circumstances, right?
Man, that you don't even know what they did.
What did they
do? I never even got to say what happened. So we were fighting at the Daytona Arena and they had the car races going on. So we were supposed to go on in the intermission of the car races, just something along those lines. And the event was supposed to take place at 10 p.m. The event was supposed to start at 10 p.m. I was the co-main event. There was 4 fights. So as we're going to the arena, they said, guys, the order of the fights have been changed. Rama, you're up first now.
What?
That's fine. Cool. I'll do it. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's cool with me. All right. We get there, guys. We might start a little bit early. Okay, fine. We'll start a little bit early. It was like 7 o'clock. We start going into the change rooms. They're like, guys, you need to go right now. We need to get in the cage immediately. I was like, what? Because it had started to rain,
right,
and the car is parked. They stopped the races. So the cars can't race in the rain, but we got to fight in the rain. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so the order had changed. As soon as I get there, we didn't get a warm-up, nothing. And that's fine. My opponent got the same thing. He showed up. He didn't get the warm up. They wrapped us up. They put the gloves on. They made us change, and we had to walk into the cage immediately. Now, the way I see it is, when you go in there, you go in there with a certain strategy. His strategy was keep this guy on the ground. Right now, it's raining. We're walking to the cage with umbrellas over us. And the commission is like wiping down the cage, the inside of the cage, trying to get the water, like trying to get the canvas dried. I'm looking at this. I'm like, wow, this is a shit show right now, man. I was like, this isn't professional fighters league. This is amateur fighters league.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we get in there, man. And this guy wants to keep me on the ground. So what do you think is going to happen when we're sitting there fighting on a plastic surface with water all over it? Where is it going to end up? Every time I tried to throw a punch, man, my feet were falling under me. Everybody was complaining. 3 guys had to get knee surgeries. It was garbage, man. It was an embarrassment.
Yeah. And I
was embarrassed to be part of that event.
And not only that, but if I'm not mistaken, I think that was on the same night as I think it was like a big UFC card or something. Because I know a lot of people like were trying to watch it at the same time while there was something else going on. I feel like there was another card on that night or something. It was just a weird night overall, I think, for PFL. It was kind of odd.
I'm not sure, but you know what? I don't blame them. You know what I mean? Like they tried something new. They didn't know the logistics of it. They should have known it, right? Because listen. You don't fight outside. Who fights outside in Florida, of all places? It's humid as hell. What do you think is going to happen? I remember Draw Zaffarino, my teammate, he shot for a takedown, and both his legs, he went for a double leg takedown, and both his legs slipped under him, and he fell face flat on the mat. It it's like that kind of stuff was happening. So it was a mistake on their part. I don't think it was intentional. I just think they just didn't have their logistics down. They don't know, but that's part of their job, right? And to be honest, man, when I talked to Ray about it, you know what he told me? He said, "You should have told me because we can easily replace you guys." I was like, wow. I was like, wow, this is crazy.
Yeah, that's not safe. I mean, you know, guys, you mentioned having a knee injury. I mean, that could have been career ending and, you know, over something that could have been easily avoided. And you mentioned not knowing ahead of time. How could they not know it's not going to rain on an outdoor event? I mean, that's crazy.
I mean, they had suspicion. They suspected it might rain, but hey, rain, man, what do you want me to say? They had a little tarp over top of the cage, but it was just as wide as the cage. It wasn't going around the whole thing. It was crazy, man. It was just a shit show, to be honest.
And there you have Celmino Rama talking to James Lynch of Flow Combat. And if you want to listen or watch that full interview that James did with Celmino, you can just go to his YouTube channel, James Lynch. I mean, look, if you're not subscribed to James Lynch on YouTube, you definitely need to do that. It has a ton of fighter interviews up there. But, you know, first off, you know, and when I initially watched that interview, the first, and I tweeted about it because I retweeted the video, and I said I would be very interested to hear what Ray Sefo and Carlos Silva's response to those comments from Celmino Rama are. Obviously, you heard what Celmino said about Ray Sefo. You know, as, you know, listening to it and writing down, I wrote down a pair of things. It makes the Professional Fighters League look like amateur promoters. Yes, it was the inaugural PFL event, but they have been doing, promoting as a World Series of Fighting. So to me, that's ultimately the question mark of, you know, ultimately, you know, fighter safety should be the number one priority. And when you go back and you think about that night, how can you sit back and say that fighter safety was the number one concern, not just from the Professional Fighters League, but also from the Florida State Boxing Commission, which, by the way, reported earlier this week, Bellator is on the Florida Boxing Commission schedule for an event down in Miami on November the 18th. You know, so there's a, you know, obviously you want to hear both sides of the story. We heard the Celmino Rama side of the story, but man, I would love to hear the Ray Sefo, Carlos Silva side of that story. And I mean, look, if you're doing an outdoor event in the state of Florida, especially in the summertime, you have to know that rain is potentially something that can happen. I mean, Dana White has always talked about that's why he doesn't want to do outside venues is because of the weather issue that you have to deal with there. And, you know, you heard right at the end of the interview, Celmino saying, you know, it was an expletive show. And, you know, it's unfortunate. And, you know, obviously Celmino, you know, hurt his knee in that fight. And, you know, I will tell you, I remember watching those fights that night. And, you know, the main event was Brian Foster and John Fitch. I think if that mat is not slippery the way it was, I think Brian Foster probably gets the win over John Fitch. But, we constantly talk about fighter relationships with promotions. You know, PFL, you know, sometimes, or World Series of Fighting, it came up in the past. And most of it had to deal with their matchmaker where, you know, certain fighters did not care for that matchmaker. But now you have this situation, and, you know, look, Ray Sefo is one of those guys that you never hear guys talk bad about, and you hear what Celmino Rama said, what Ray Sefo said to him. So, like I said, you know, there's more than one side to a story. I mean, there's probably likely, you know, could be as much as three sides to a story, you know, side A, side C, and side B, somewhere in the middle maybe is where the truth lies. But when I listened to that, I was amazed by that. By the way, speaking of being amazed by something, so earlier this week, sitting here in my office, you know, going through the daily work schedule that I go through, finally getting back to a normal schedule after dealing with Hurricane Irma, I saw this tweet come across my timeline. It was a MMA reporter. And look, I understand that there's fans out there that love to bash the MMA media. Some I think is deserved. Some I think is not so deserved. But when I saw somebody, you know, talk about how a fighter has leverage because the UFC needs a main event, there's only one fighter that has leverage with the UFC, and I hope that all my media members will, and I think a majority of the MMA media understands this. There's only one fighter that has leverage on the UFC, and that fighter's name is Conor McGregor. This reporter said, you know, was that Max Holloway had leverage. I'm like, look, Max Holloway is a great fighter, but let's not sit here and think Max Holloway has leverage on the UFC. His last two fights have been main event fights. They've combined to sell 350,000 buys reportedly. Think about that. He had one, 150,000 buys. The second one, 200,000 buys. So if you think Max Holloway has leverage, you're wrong. You're just simply wrong about that. I saw that, and I even replied to that reporter saying, yeah, there's only one fighter who has leverage on the UFC, and that fighter's name is Conor McGregor. And Max Holloway, maybe at some point he can get leverage on the UFC, but right now he has no leverage, because the way you get leverage on the UFC is by going out there and being a big pay-per-view draw. But, Max Holloway, it sounds like contract negotiations on a new deal with the UFC are going well. You know, all signs do point. They want to do the matchup against Frankie Edgar. And, we'll see what happens there. Jose Aldo, is looking for a fight. So we'll see when he does get a fight in the UFC. Also, speaking of fight bookings, there was, as a recording of this podcast, it's not been officially announced by Bellator, but there was a report from MMA today that David Rickles versus Brendan Ward is taking place at Bellator 185 on October the 20th. I can tell you that about a day before that report came out, I did hear about that fight booking. And, I think it's an ideal TV fight for Bellator, if you really think about it. I mean, it's, you know, two guys who are action-packed fighters. I mean, in a way, it's a 50-50 fight when you really think about it. It's probably just going to come of who lands at that, ending right or left hand. I mean, both guys got heavy hands. You know, Brennan obviously has lost back-to-back fights. David Rickles moved back up to welterweight in his last matchup. I think that's something a lot of people did not know, that he didn't go up. I mean, you know, when I think of David Rickles, and I've talked to David about this, is, 165 to me is the ideal weight class for David Rickles, because he has to cut so much to get down to 155, but I mean, he's just at 170, he's small, especially when you look at the top guys in that Bellator welterweight division, maybe with the exception of Paul Daly. They're all just, massive guys. So, 165 to me would be ideal fight for David Rickles. I don't know who I favor in that matchup. As I said, I think that's a 50-50 fight. I think that's a fight that really could go either way. I just think ultimately it comes down to who's going to end, that one glancing blow that's going to end the night. But, a nice little fight that's been added to Bellator 185. Of course, I had recently reported that out of competition testing drug testing has taken place for Bellator 185. The first round of out of competition test results did come back. Those did come back clean. I will tell you that I did reach out to Andy Foster of the California State Athletic Commission on Tuesday and asked him about out of competition testing for Bellator 183. As of the recording of this podcast, I have not heard from Andy Foster, but once I do hear from Andy, I will let you know exactly what he has to say there. Also, speaking of Bellator, they are going to crown their 125-pound female champion at Bellator 186. This is going to take place November the 3rd on the campus of Penn State University. Alimale McFarlane, Emily Ducote, which is a rematch from Bellator 167. They will fight for the 125-pound title. Scott Coker informed that fight booking to MMA Junkie on Tuesday of this week. I know a lot of people were wondering when Bellator would finally crown a female flyweight champion. That is now taking place. And look, I think Bellator has done a great job of building up that 125-pound division. I think they've done a much better job of developing that division than developing women's 145 pounds. And I think that a big part of that is simply because there's just more talent at 125 as opposed to 145 pounds. But it'll be interesting now with the UFC in the 125-pound business and females. Will that be something that you know, they can develop? Also, some other fight bookings of note to mention. UFC veteran John Howard is going to headline CES MMA 46. He is going to take on Roger Carroll. Of course, we've seen Roger, you know, he's fought in CES and also has fought in Bellator. Also, there's a report that says Jose Aldo or Carl Lamas is going to take place. Of course, Ricardo Lamas coming off that great victory. Then, of course, coming up this weekend, Bellator 183 and UFC Fight Night Japan. I mentioned this on the Post Fight Podcast. If you have to choose, if you only had one MMA event to watch this weekend, to me, no question, it is the Bellator event. Bellator has done a tremendous job booking this main card that's going to be on Spike. You know, the preliminary card is primarily, you know, for, you know, a bunch of local ticket sellers that we're going to see there. You know, when he looks at notable names on that preliminary card, Brooke Mayo, who made her pro debut recently, she's going to be on this fight card. But for the most part, it is nothing but local talent there from the Northern California area. Of course, also this event is Bellator kickboxing. But when you look at that five-fight main card, great lineup. According to a press release on Tuesday, the co-main event actually is Paul Daly versus Lorenz Larkin. Of course, Benson Anderson, Patricky Pitbull, the main event. Nelson, Hayala, that's a matchup that's going to be very interesting. Roy Nelson making his Bellator debut. What can he do there in the Bellator heavyweight division? Of course, Javi Ayala have been on a nice little streak here. Pico and Lin, of course, you're going to hear from Justin Lin here in a little bit. And Adam Piccolotti, Gochi Yamauchi, that is a fight. You talk about an under-the-radar fight. That's an under-the-radar fight, and that's a matchup that really looking forward to seeing how that one does play out. And Adam Piccolotti, you know, you got to imagine if he gets a win over Gochi Yamauchi, he's got to start to kind of get in that conversation of the title picture there at 155 pounds. That's definitely a fight that has my interest on Saturday night. Do not know if I'm going to be able to watch Bellator 183 live. I'll be up in Minneapolis, so you know, you never know whether I'm truly able, but we'll definitely have a DVR, and we'll probably end up watching it on my way back to Tampa from Minneapolis. But of course, on Friday night, you have UFC Fight Night, which went through a change late last week as Shogun Hua out of this fight card. OSP will now take on Yushin Okami as Yushin returns to the UFC. You know, I was had a good amount of interest in OSP Shogun. I think more about, you know, Shogun, which is a guy that I think for the most part a lot of us probably had written off not too long ago, but he's been on a nice little streak. We'll see how OSP can do in this one. You know, I don't like this matchup for Yushin Okami. I think that probably part of this may have to do with, you know, maybe, you know, just trying to, you know, get somebody on 1 week's notice to fight in Japan against OSP, maybe kind of limited their options. So Yushin returns to the UFC. We'll see what happens here. You know, you got to imagine after this fight, he goes back down to 185. But I think we're going to see a pretty, I like OSP in that matchup. You know, when he talks about, you know, other, you know, fights on this fight card, I mean, this is, you know, UFC Pittsburgh, you know, last weekend's card was not a sexy fight card, but the fights ultimately end up delivering. You know, this is kind of a very similar fight card. It's not that sexy fight card on paper, but who knows? Maybe if you tune in on Friday night on FXX, not FS1, on FXX at 10 p.m. Eastern time, maybe these fights end up delivering. Co-main event, big matchup at 115 pounds between former title challengers Claudia Gadelha and Jessica Andrade. That's a big matchup there at 115 pounds. Takanori Gomi getting another fight in the UFC as he takes on Dong Young Kim. You got Gokhan Saki, of course, making his UFC debut, taking on Enrique Da Silva. That's probably one of those, you know, Saki is one of those fighters that you're definitely taking an interest to. Also, my guy, Taruto Ishihara, if you listen to the preview post-fight show, you know me and Dane are big fans of Taruto Ishihara. So, you know, probably just because guy has a great personality. Also, you got Charles Arota and or Charles Rosa taking on Hirota. That's going to be the opening matchup of the main card. Starts 10 p.m. Eastern time. Your prelims on FXX. Start at 8 p.m. Eastern time, and then you're going to have one early prelim on UFC Fight Pass starting at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. You know, I don't know if I'll be watching these fights live or not, you know, since I'm leaving on Saturday. Probably spend a little time with the wife, but maybe if she calls in an early night, maybe I'll be sitting on the couch watching these fights. But, you know, look, as I said, if you only had to watch one MMA event this weekend, to me, it's got to be the Bellator event. You know, you got to give a lot of kudos to Bellator for putting together a fight card that, you know, look, has stayed together, you know. And, you know, Benson, you're going to hear from Patricia Pitbull here momentarily. Big matchup at 155 pounds. You know, it was interesting last week, you know, listening to Benson Henderson. And really, I would tell you, I was pretty floored when I asked him about, you know, 165. I thought he would just be down for that weight class, but to hear that he wasn't exactly all, you know, doesn't think that more weight classes is the answer. So, but that's a big matchup. You're going to hear from Patricky Pitbull here momentarily. Had a chance to catch up with Patricky late last week, talked to him about, you know, really everything. You know, we talked to him about the Josh Thompson, the asterisk that's next to him, kind of got his thoughts about that. You know, also got his response to what Benson Henderson called him flat-footed. So, going to let you hear my conversation with Patricky Pitbull right now. Of course, it'll be in the main event of Saturday's Bellator 183. Last week on the podcast, we had Benson Henderson. This week on the show, we are joined by his opponent in the main event of Bellator 183. It is Patricky Pitbull. As always, Patricky, I appreciate the time. I saw that Henry Cejudo has been doing some training with your team. Just wondering, what do you take away from him, and particularly with the wrestling, as you prepare to fight Benson Henderson?
Agradeceu tudo e falou sobre Harry, né, que Harry treinou um tempo aqui com vocês. O que é que você absorveu dele, particularmente no wrestling, em sua preparação para essa luta corrente?
Ele é um cara muito forte, é um cara que é muito rápido também, é um cara impressionante de se assistir, muito bonito de se ver treinando no wrestling. Então, eu acho que eu admirei mais ele treinando do que eu treinei com ele. Foram poucas as vezes que eu consegui treinar com ele. Alguns treinos específicos de wrestling, mas eu aprendi muita coisa com ele. Sempre estou conversando com ele, trocando muitas ideias. É um cara muito aberto e parece ser até um irmão que eu conheço há muito tempo. E parece ser, até ser um brasileiro. Talvez por ser um latino... nós temos essa facilidade de convivência de conversar bom, de ter uma boa ideia e ser amigos a longas datas.
He is very fast and very strong, and it's beautiful to see him wrestling. I think I've admired him more during practice than I trained with him, but there were some specific situations during practice that they put us together, and it was just great to have him here to discuss with him about fighting with him. And all the experience, he's a great person. And we had a very easy way to communicate. And it felt like he was a Brazilian because of his Latin heritage. It felt like he was another one of us. Like a brother or a friend from a long time ago, we clicked really well, and it was great to have him here. I learned a lot from him during his time, and I definitely think that there are some new things that he's added to my game.
Of course, the last time we saw you in the cage, devastating knockout of Josh Thompson. Have to ask you, when you find out that the commission is putting an asterisk next to that result because of you know, Josh talking about you know, the headbutt in that fight, what was your immediate reaction?
Eu não sei, na sua última luta teve uma nocaute espetacular sobre o Josh Thompson. E qual foi sua reação imediata ao saber que a comissão botou um asterisco naquela luta? Né, que o Josh tentou apelar o resultado e ele acabou deixando um asterisco aí. Qual sua reação inicial?
Eu fico chateado por isso, por essa tentativa constante de tentar apagar minha vitória, mas esse asterisco aí para mim não significa nada. O que importa é que eu venci e todos viram que não existiu isso que ele está falando, então é isso que importa. Todos viram que ele se projetou contra a minha pessoa, e não foi eu que dei cabeçada nenhuma, na verdade quem levou a cabeçada foi eu. Então, se alguém era para ter sido prejudicado, que era para ter sido prejudicado ali, era eu. Alguém que levou a cabeçada foi eu. E não tinha nada de machucado ali, como ele fala que estava machucado após esse incidente. Então, ele se levantou muito bem, ainda tentou me atacar com a entrada do double leg e tentar me derrubar.
I feel very annoyed with his constant tries to change the result, putting a stain on my win. But the asterisk at the end of the day doesn't mean anything to me. What matters is that I won, and the way I won, everyone that saw the fight knows that what he said didn't happen. There was no clash of heads. There was no headbutt from me on him. It was the other way around. He was the one that hit me with a headbutt. So if anyone had trouble with an illegal shot, it would have been me. But I didn't even feel it when that happened. And when he got up, he was completely fine. He wasn't phased at any moment at all. He even tried to attack me with a double leg, and I hit him. So I think it's a clear cut win, but at the end of it, it's still very sad and a big line that he tried to take that away from me.
Now, of course, your brother has fought Benson Henderson as well. Has he given you any advice in preparations for this fight that, really has stuck out to you about, what Benson's going to offer?
Obviamente, seu irmão já lutou com Behrens. Teve alguma coisa que ele falou em preparação para essa luta? Alguma coisa que deveria para você?
A única coisa que ele falou, que ele bate na tecla bastante, é que ele falou que Ben Hendricks não me aguenta e que se eu lutar com ele, eu vou matar ele. Então, quando meu irmão fala isso, eu tenho pura convicção que ele está falando uma coisa que ele tem muita certeza. Porque assim que quando ele se lesionou, ele foi a primeira coisa que ele falou após a lesão, assim que sentou no banco. Ele falou, Patrick, se você lutar com esse cara, você vai destruir ele. Esse cara não lhe aguenta.
The thing that he's been saying to me the most is that when I fight Mr. Henderson, I'm going to kill him, that he's not able to withstand me. And he's been saying that a lot. And when my brother says something like that, I have pure conviction that it's because he truly believes, and if he truly believes, that's because it's going to happen. And it's something that he said to me right after his fight, as soon as he got injured, and he sat down on this stool. The first thing he told me was, he looked at me and he said, Patrick, if you fight this guy, you're going to destroy him. He can't handle you. So that's what I've been having in my mind since then.
When I had a chance to talk to Benson, he raved about you. He said, you're a smart fighter. You are a fighter's fighter. But he did talk about, you have a lot of similarities with your brother. He felt that, you both have similar combinations. But one of the things that he said was he believes that you're more flat-footed than your brother. What was your response to him saying you're flat-footed?
se você falou com o Hanson, ele elogiou, disse que você é um lutador de verdade, disse que você tem muitas similaridades com o seu irmão, que você joga as mesmas combinações, mas ele disse que você é mais parado, você é paradão, assim. O que é que você tem a dizer sobre ele dizer que você é um cara paradão?
É bom saber que ele está falando isso. Eu sei que ele estudou, ele e a equipe dele é uma equipe muito estratégica e que ele, eu tenho quase certeza que ele vai tentar me derrubar. Ele não vai arriscar uma trocação comigo, não vai tentar perder a cabeça nessa luta. Então, a estratégia dele, eu tenho quase certeza que é tentar me agarrar, porque ele sabe que não tem condição de me vencer na luta interna.
Mas sobre ele falar especificamente que você é paradão, quer que você saiba isso?
Cara, eu sou um pouco mais parado, sim, porque eu fico tentando caçar a cabeça do meu adversário para arrancar fora. Então, deve ser por isso que eu fico parado desse jeito, para querer meter minha mão e acabar com tudo.
I'm a bit more flat-footed, yes, that's real, but that is because I try to tear off my opponent's head. So if I'm a little bit flat-footed, it's because I'm getting the power to land one at my opponent and finish them off. I don't take this as an offense. It's actually something that I do constantly. But I'm pretty sure he's also saying that because he's going to try and take me down. He and his team are very worried about strategies. They're very strategic during the fight, and he's not just going to come and brawl with me and risk losing his head in the moment. So that's one of the reasons he might be saying that, but nothing that he's thinking that's going to go his way is going to happen.
Of course, a victory here puts you right in line for a title shot. Any preference on who you fight, whether it would be Brent Primus or maybe Michael Chandler if he gets the title back?
Obviamente, a sua vitória aqui deve botar você para disputar o cinturão. Então, você acha que quem você prefere entre Primus e Chandler ser seu próximo adversário?
Claramente, eu quero bater em Brent Primus, porque ele já me desafiou várias vezes e, apesar de ele ter me desafiado, ele me desafia, o que eu acho mais engraçado é que ele é um cara que me desafia e quando a luta é marcada, ele corre. Então, foram duas vezes que ele correu. Uma foi na Itália e outra ele falou que não ia conseguir bater o peso. Então, eu quero bater em caras assim que gostam de falar, mas na hora que a luta está para acontecer, ele sai da luta com medo. Nós tivemos várias oportunidades de lutar, o Bellator ofereceu várias outras vezes e ele não aceitou.
I'd like to fight Primus first, because we have some history. He's been talking crap about me online, but two times Bellator has matched this up and he left the fight. One was in Italy, I don't know why, and then the other one, I believe he said he wouldn't be able to make the weight. And several other times, Bellator offered me as an opponent for him, and he came up with excuses not to take it. So I would like to fight him first, then deal with Chandler.
Patricky, as always, I appreciate the time. Good luck here. Come at Bellator 183 against Benson Henderson.
Patricky, agradeço o tempo. Boa sorte no Bellator 183 contra o Benson Henderson.
Thank you, man.
Thanks, Jason.
Very interesting to hear what Patricky Pitbull had to say about the comments from Benson Henderson about calling him flat-footed. I did not expect him to agree with that, but you did agree with that. But we'll see. I mean, that's a great matchup, and we'll see. Can Benson Henderson handle the power of Patricky Pitbull coming up on Saturday night? Should be a great matchup. They're also interested to kind of hear about Henry Cejudo training with the Pitbull Brothers team. Now, of course, this fight card's also going to see a big matchup in the welterweight division. Last week on the podcast, we had Paul Daly on. This week, we are joined by his opponent, Lorenz Larkin. Of course, Lorenz lost his Bellator debut against Douglas Lima earlier this year at Bellator NYC, so he'll look to get back into that title fight picture when he takes on Paul Daly. So in this interview you're going to hear right now, I talked to him. We talked a little bit about the fight. We talked a lot of things outside of the fight, but did talk to him about the comments that Paul Daly said about calling him overrated and the fact of how bad he wants to hurt Paul Daly in this fight. Joining me now here on the MMA Report on Radio Influence, Manska returning to the Bellator cage coming on Saturday night, September the 23rd. As he takes on Paul Daly. It is Lorenz Larkin. Lorenz, how's it going, man?
Hey, what's going on? I'm doing good.
Great to hear. Great, or it's great here on this side. Second fight in Bellator. Of course, everyone remembers what happened in the first fight. Is it one of those things of it's already in the rearview mirror, or is it one of those things that you still constantly think about?
No, I actually, if I'm done, you know, I cannot think about it. You know, I know the mistakes I've done in the fight, and, you know, I went into that fight at 100%. Conditioning was at 100%. Camp was at 100%, you know. Lima was just the better guy that night, and I made some mistakes that cost me the fight, and, you know, I just chalk it up as that, you know, and look forward towards the path of getting right back to where, you know, getting back to that fight and fixing those mistakes.
And now it's Paul Daly. When this fight was first revealed, there was a quote that Paul had in the Telegraph where he called you overrated. Recently, he said that you are below the level of fighter that he's used to fighting. Do you take that as a sign of disrespect or of a sign that maybe he's not taking you as serious as he has taken other opponents?
However it goes, you know, it's proof in the pudding, you know, like, this is not, you know, hearsay, you know. My record talks for itself, you know, and the guys I fought, you know, it shows my caliber of a fighter. So, you know, I don't pay no attention to stupid, you know, comments like that, you know, uneducated comments like that. So, you know, it is what it is. And the thing is with him is, especially talking to you guys, this stuff is documented forever, right? So, you know, he's the one who's going to have to answer to all this stuff after the fight, not me.
You know, obviously, I think a term overrated, you know, it tends to get thrown out in terms of a fight promotion. Is this the first time someone's ever said that to you?
Yeah, I think that's probably the first time I heard about being overrated. You know, so I guess I'll be overrated, whatever.
You know, I was talking to Benson Henderson, who's going to be on this card, and we were talking about perceptions versus realities. You know, you've been in the national MMA spotlight for some time now, and, you know, he talked about some perceptions that people have of him. Do you think there's any perceptions that the MMA fans or the MMA media have about you that is just not reality?
I'm not too sure, you know. I don't know. I don't even know what the hell my perception what people's perception of me is. So, I'm not too sure. Anytime I read stuff, though, it's like, you know, it's like, I guess I'm down to earth, which I consider myself down to earth. I don't know. I haven't really seen too much, like, nothing saying, like, I'm a dickhead or anything like that. So, I don't know. I don't know what my perception is. Unless, you know, I don't know.
No, I mean, when I ask fighters that question, a lot of the times I get, you know, a lot of the responses are, hey, I want people to know I'm a nice guy. Just because I'm a fighter doesn't mean I'm just like, you know, some guy who's going to be an a-hole to you all the time. Is that, do you maybe when you meet people who maybe once they find out you're a fighter, maybe they're kind of blown away once they have a conversation with you?
Yeah, okay, so I will say that, you know, a lot of, I don't know what fighters are out there that are these dickheads. because, you know, a lot of fans, when they come up to me, you know, just period, not even around fights, you know, just on a random day-to-day thing, like, they're real apprehensive, you know, that they don't really want to come up because, you know, I don't know if they've had a bad experience before with dickheads out there, you know, so I don't know, but, you know, after I talk to somebody, you know, they're, if they weren't my fan, they're my fan after we talk, you know. I'd rather people just come up and just be like, what's up, and then, you know, we'll just start having a conversation, you know, and I think that's one of the things that earned me my fans and keeps me getting fans, you know, and loyal fans, because, you know, after every fight, I always make it a point to, you know, hurry up, get dressed, you know, to hurry up, take a shower, get dressed, and get back out to the fans, you know, after our fight, and mingle with them and try to talk to them. You know, a lot of the times I'll just get, you know, usually the fighters are always down there by the cage, you know, after their fights. You know, I always try to get up into the stands and kick in and have a drink with, you know, fans and watch the fight with them and just try to do those type of things. You know, so I never really had that experience with fans other than, you know, you're like occasional keyboard warriors, you know, but other than that, all the fans have been real cool to me and not even anything with them.
Bobby Lashley likes to call them couch warriors because most of the time they're probably on their phone from their couch, you know, writing. Is there anything that has ever been said to you on social media that you were just like, how can somebody write that to me?
You know, I have real thick skin now, and I understand, like, I just look at it like, it's not even, it's crazy. It's kind of sad in a sense because these guys don't truly hate the fighters themselves. You know what I mean? It's like these keyboard warriors, they don't really hate the fighter. They just want that guy to acknowledge them in a comment. You know what I mean? And that's the weird thing that gets me. I'm just like, it's like when I just look at some of the stuff that people write to other people, or, you know, I see it to me, you know, I'm just like, they don't even truly, like, not like you. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that doesn't happen with certain people, but I feel like they don't even truly not like the fighter. They just want the fighter to, like, mention them in their comment and like, go back. They just want to go back and forth with somebody that they watch on, you know, TV or something like that. Like, that's the only reason why they do it. Like, if the person never said anything back to the keyboard warrior, they would just give up. You know what I mean? Like, they're hoping that fighter or whoever it is, you know, mentions them in their comment. And like, you piece of shit. You know, they want that, you know? It's kind of sad, but, you know, it is what it is.
You know, we're talking about the way people think of you. I think one of the things that comes to my mind when I hear your name is the different designs you have with your hair on fight night. So have you already decided what the design's going to be for this fight?
Same thing, man. So, you know, the Mohawk with the Riverside belt in it. Same cut. I think it's starting to come to the signature cut now. So I don't think I can get rid of it.
Now, in terms of the fight with Paul, obviously you are, I know you're not going to give away your game plan, but is it one of those things of, you know, you just see the victory coming a certain way?
I see him experiencing a lot of pain, you know. I don't know, man. I'm just the goal is to really hurt this guy. You know, and with anybody I've ever fought, you know, the goal is to hurt the person. But you know, after the fight, you know, I wish well of that opponent. You know what I mean? So, you know, just like Lima, you know, in the fight with Lima, I'm trying to physically hurt him, you know, as best as I can, you know, but after the fight, you know, we talked and we showed our respect, and, you know, in the back room, we're going back and forth, like, you know, tell each other how tough each of us were, and I respect the guy, but, you know, with him, I'm really trying to physically hurt him to the point where he's not able to fight anymore. I wish nothing well after this fight. You know, I hope that I land something really devastating in this fight to end his career. You know, I have no remorse in anything after this fight. You know, I wish the worst for him after this fight.
Do you feel that way because of some of the things he has said in the build up to this fight?
Yeah, you know, it's just a thing of there's things of selling fights. I get that whole thing, but it's just never been me. You know, I'm in the business of fighting. You know, I get the whole selling thing, and you try to do these things, but there's ways of going about it, and you know, I'm just never been with that fake stuff. You know, and I feel like that's how he is. You know, a lot of his stuff is fake, and he tries to portray this thing that he's really not. You know, and those type of things, they all come out. You know what I mean? And we'll see. You know, if he's really about what he says. You know, but I just don't play those games. You know, I don't have to do none of that stuff. I don't have to get in somebody's face at the weigh in because we're gonna fight. You know what I mean? I don't expect that. If the guy shows up the weigh ins, I don't expect to scare him. You know, by looking in his face. You know, if the guy flew thousands of miles or hundreds of miles to meet me at a place to weigh in and fight me the next day, the guys aren't scared. You know what I mean? So, you know, I don't know, man. I've just never done these things because, you know, we're going to fight. So this is one of those fights where I truly don't like the guy. And this is the only fight I've ever fought in my career where I truly don't like the guy. So, you know, we'll see how it goes, but you know, this is not a fight where it's going to be one of those things where after we fight, we shake hands and we show that respect. You know what I mean? I don't want that. That's fake shit to me. You know, that's not how I am.
And, of course, everyone's going to be able to watch this fight coming on Saturday night, September the 23rd, live on Spike TV, beginning 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Time, as you'll see Lorenz take on Paul Daly. Of course, headlined by Benson Henderson, taking on Patricky Pitbull. Lorenz, I appreciate the time, and good luck in the fight.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it.
And the biggest takeaway you have to take away from that interview with Lorenz Larkin is the fact of this is the first time he's truly hated his opponent. And we'll see. You know, it makes you wonder, could he maybe fight a little too emotional on Saturday night at Bellator 183? But, I mean, look, you know, even if you're just a UFC fan and maybe you don't watch the Bellator product very often, how do you not love that matchup between Paul Daly and Lorenz Larkin? It should be a tremendous matchup on Saturday night there in San Jose. And, you know, you always hate to say that fight can't suck. I mean, literally, you know, I expect those two guys to go in there, stand and trade. And it's either going to last 15 minutes or someone's going to get knocked out in that matchup. So looking forward to that. Now, next up, you're going to hear from Justin Lin. Of course, he is going to be taking on Aaron Pico. We had Aaron on the podcast last week to talk about his second professional fight. And I'm sure a lot of people maybe do not know who Justin Lin is. So had a chance to catch up with Justin, found out who he is, and also talked to him about his matchup against Aaron Pico. Joining me now here on the MMA Report on Radio Influence, a man that's going to be stepping inside the Bellator cage going Saturday night, September the 23rd. He takes on Aaron Pico. It is Justin Lin, who is 7-3 in his career. Justin, I appreciate the time during your preparations for this fight. You know, when this fight was announced, a lot of people probably immediately went in front of their computer or their phone, their tablet, and they Google your name. What would you want fans to know about you first off?
You know, first off, I don't even know that I'm a 35er. You know, I'm not even a 45er, but I have no problem meeting Aaron Pico in the middle. You know, I think that a lot of people are going to be surprised when they see me fight. I think they're going to be surprised that I'm a 35er that can actually hang with 55ers and things like that. So that's about it.
When you get the phone call and it's a fight offer to fight Aaron Pico, what went through your mindset?
I didn't know who he was, to be honest with you. I never heard of Aaron Pico until I got his name in my messenger. So I didn't know who he was. I looked him up. I knew he was a wrestler, but I faced wrestlers before. And I saw he had some boxing experience, and I've faced boxers before, so I had no problem facing Aaron Pico. Like I said, I fought 3 UFC fighters in the past, and I don't feel like he's got anything new or different or, you know, to bring to the table than anybody else that I've fought.
We haven't seen you compete since April 1st of 2016. So what's been going on since that fight?
Since my last fight or his?
Your last fight.
My last fight with Cody Gibson?
Yes.
I've just been kind of reevaluating myself, like, in the striking department. When I was fighting Cody Gibson, it really opened my eyes to the boxing, you know, because I was more of a Muay Thai guy. And I really needed to just hone down on my boxing and focus on that. And that's just what I've been doing now. I mean, I'm already, you know, black belt level on the ground. You know, I went to Gracie Jiu-Jitsu in Las Vegas, and they told me I was a black brown, black belt level, high brown. And so, I mean, that's all I've been working on mostly is just my boxing.
And when this fight was announced, I think a lot of people, I think one of the first thoughts was, wow, Bellator once again is putting Aaron in there with someone who's got a wide range of experience. You've got, you know, 10 pro MMA matchups, but do you at all feel that maybe your people are underestimating your abilities in this matchup?
No, I mean, Aaron Pico is confident in himself, so obviously, you know, I've heard stories about what he's done in the gym and things like that, so I'm sure he's not a no chump, you know what I mean? Just because he doesn't have any fights doesn't mean anything, you know? I mean, obviously, there's going to be some key factors like composure and things like that and the jitters and, you know, keeping the adrenaline down and things like that, but other than that, he's in shape and he's going to do what he does when he's in the gym. So I'm not going to be surprised if he comes out 100 miles per hour 3 rounds straight.
Is it difficult to prepare for a guy who only has 24 seconds of MMA competition that you can look at?
No, I've seen all that I need to see. He's flat-footed. He swings wide. He comes straight forward. I mean, that's what I've seen. From, you know, that's how he got caught. I mean, anybody can get caught early, but from what I've seen, he swings a little bit too wide for me. You know, I'm more of a down-the-pipe kind of guy. I like to shoot right down the pipe. And he just seemed like a little bit too wide, a little bit too flat-footed, or things like that. I'm sure he probably was looking for a takedown when he got caught or something like that. But as soon as he came out, he didn't seem like he was bouncing on his toes, ready to box.
You enter this fight with back-to-back defeats. Do you at all have a extra weight, a chip at all on your shoulder, just you know, trying to get past those two fights?
No, man, those guys I thought were pretty decent opponents. I mean, I didn't train for any of those guys. I don't have a camp where I live. I have to travel to train. So the fact that I went, you know, 3 rounds with Cody, I think says a lot about myself for not having a camp and things like that. So, I mean, I only trained 3 weeks for Cody Gibson, and I went to a hard-fought decision, you know. And so things like that kind of give me confidence in you know, in that area. But, no, man,
going to be a great fight. I think it'll be good.
And, of course, this fight will be a part of the main card on Spike on Saturday night, September the 23rd. Of course, I'll start at 9 p.m. here where I'm at on the East Coast, 6 p.m. local time there. In San Jose, you know, obviously you're going to be fighting, you know, in front of people that have never seen you fight. I mean, do you look at this as essentially an opportunity, as a career-changing moment for you to sit there and for people to actually know who you are?
Yeah, I mean, because I mean, I'm not well known in the MMA world. I mean, I thought some names, so some people know me here and there. But after this fight, people are gonna know who I am.
Now, when I was looking you up, when I was looking you up, and one of the things that jumped out to me was the nickname, the Mortal Sin. So, what is the story behind the nickname?
Well, when I was around 3 years old, I got that nickname. My uncle, he used to call me Justin Mitchell Lynn. He's the Mortal Sin, and he used to just say that to me all the time because I was such a little brat, I guess. So he would just call me a little Mortal Sin, you know? And it kind of just stuck with me because my last name, it rhymes with sin, so it just stuck with me all throughout my childhood, you know? It was something that just always did my name, you know? So it's not like I came up with it on a fly or anything like that. I wasn't watching Mortal Kombat, and that might turn when it happened.
Now, have your teammates tried to give you a different nickname? Or are they like, no, man, that's your nickname?
There's been a few who's been wanting to change it because for, like, religious views and things like that. But I just tell them, you know, man, it stuck with me for so long. There's no way I'm changing it, you know. And if I was to change it, I don't even know what I would change it to. So
now,
I'd just stop it all together, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of life outside of fighting, what do you have any hobbies that kind of get your mindset off the fight game?
No, I mean, fighting is my life. I focus on it night and day. You know, I don't think or do anything else. I never work a day in my life. I focus on fighting. My whole career, even when I'm on the couch and I'm thinking of combos, watching videos, watching my footage, you know, watching sparring videos, I film myself when I hit the bag, you know. That's all I really focus on is martial arts, nothing really else. I mean, that and video game.
Is there a go-to video game right now?
I used to play Destiny, but I play a lot of UFC online.
Of course, but everyone's going to be able to see your fight come up here on Saturday night, September the 23rd, as you take on Aaron Pico. You know, for the fans that are going to be tuning in, what would you tell them of why they need to make sure that they watch your fight?
Because I'm exciting, man. I mean, every fight I'm in, it's action-packed. You know, it's always exciting. No matter who I fight, I'm in there to give it my all. Bang in the pocket, you know, I like to strike, make it a fast-paced fight. I mean, obviously, he's a wrestler, so it might be boring to get me down, you know, it might do a little bit of grappling, but I don't mind. I'm going to try to make it exciting as much as possible, just so I can entertain the fans.
And where can my listeners follow you at on social media?
What's that?
Where can my listeners follow you at on social media?
Social media?
Yeah, your Facebook, your Twitter, your Instagram.
I don't even know, man. I have a Facebook, but I don't know the URL or things like that. I'm not too into, you know, social media. I mean, obviously I have a Instagram. I think it's JTMSL, Justin the Mortal Sin Lynn, 209. And Facebook might be Justin Lynn Mortal Sin, you know, things like that. Just search that in for Facebook. But I don't know the URL, or I don't have a Twitter, so.
Justin, I appreciate you coming on the show. Good luck at Bellator 183.
Thank you, sir.
And there you got to learn a little bit about who Justin Lynn is prior to Bellator 183 on Saturday night. Obviously, a huge opportunity for Justin Lin to become a name in MMA. And, you know, when you think about that fight, to me, it is more about what are we going to see with Aaron Pico. I truly do expect we are not going to see an Aaron Pico that rushes in like he did against Zach Freeman. I think we are going to see a fighter that is going to take more time. You know, I think he's going to be a patient fighter in that matchup, but really, still, I think we don't know what to expect out of Aaron Pico. And for Justin Lin, you have to imagine that's what kind of makes the preparations for this fight tough for him, is because maybe he doesn't necessarily know what Aaron Pico is going to offer there. So good luck to Aaron Pico. Of course, we'll have more coverage of Bellator 183 later on this week, as myself and Daniel Galvan will have a preview podcast for Bellator 183, also UFC Fight Night Japan. But do want to now turn my attention over to the UFC. Of course, coming up in a couple of weeks, we have UFC 216 from the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada, going to be headlined by interim lightweight title fight Tony Ferguson, Kevin Lee, and the co-main event will be the flyweight title fight Demetrius Johnson taking on Ray Borg. Of course, a fight we were supposed to see at UFC 215, but unfortunately, Ray Borg had to pull out of that fight due to an illness. And I know a lot of people kind of feel it's a slap in the face to Demetrius Johnson to have him in the co-main event, but I'm not surprised the UFC put him in the co-main event. And when the official poster came out for the flyweight title fight, championship was spelled wrong, which is just, you would think there would be a little bit of, you know, someone who kind of goes through that to do the spell check there. But for me, not surprised that it's a co-main event of the evening. But you're going to hear from Cody Stamann, who's going to be on the preliminary card taking on Tom Dukinwah. Of course, Cody Stamann made his UFC debut earlier this year, UFC 213, got a decision win over Tarion Ware. Of course, he took that fight on 8 days' notice. He had 8 weeks, has 8 weeks, to prepare for this matchup. So I had a chance to talk to Cody this week about his fight against Tom Dukinwah at UFC 216. Joining me now here on the MMA Report on Radio Influence, Manscova's second UFC fight coming up here October 7th, UFC 216 in Las Vegas, as he takes on Tom Dukinwah, Cody Stamann. Cody, as always, appreciate the time. Right before we start, we were kind of joking about 8 weeks prepared for this matchup as opposed to 8 days. What do you remember most about those 8 days?
I remember really just trying to live in the moment. You know, everything happened so fast. I had to get so much done in such a short amount of time. I mean, all my medicals, you know, planes and bout agreements, all these things. Lucky I had a lot of help from my management and a lot of other people. I was just trying to take it all in. When I got there, I was trying not to kind of be like a little fanboy and, run around to all the guys that, you know, I look up to. I was trying to just stay focused and be in that moment and, devise a game plan, come up, sharpen things as much as I could. And in the time that I had, isn't much. I remember it being an awesome experience all the way around. I mean, everything happened so fast. It didn't really give me time to get nervous or worried. So, I just went out there and did what I had to do to get the win.
And you got the win over Tarion Ware. I know you're going to look at the negative aspects of the fight much more than the positive aspects, but how do you assess your own performance?
For the amount of time I had, I feel like if I was going to give myself a grade, I'd probably give myself a B. I look at that third round and I think I had a little bit more in the tank and I could have pushed it a little bit harder. I didn't know what I had in the tank. You know, I hadn't been training. I hadn't been doing the things I needed to do to know that, I was coming off an injury, and getting in there and just not knowing, what you have to give is hard. So I'd give myself a B going back. I think I could have pushed a little bit harder, but no excuses coming into this one. I've had 8 full weeks of, really good training and, you'll see a whole different Cody Stamann come the 7th.
Were you familiar with Tom Dukinwah before getting this fight offer?
Yep. I watched him fight. I watched him fight in his debut. I think that was back in like April or March. It was pretty close to when I'd fought.
And, you know, I wasn't really super impressed with his performance. You know, a guy coming from Europe, you know, he's probably the biggest name guy in Europe, mm-hmm. you know, French guy. I feel like he's got huge following over there. You know, I was really expecting something spectacular, and I didn't see it. You know, don't get me wrong, the dude, he brings it every fight. He's a great athlete. He's a great fighter, but I don't think he could beat me.
As you have prepared for this fight, have you noticed just a glaring mistake that his previous opponents have made, and it just keeps showing up over and over again?
I'm not sure. It's his opponents. You know, I've definitely noticed some tendencies that he has as an athlete, as a fighter. But I just feel like what I bring to the table is a lot more than what his opponents have brought to the table. So I definitely think and know that, you know, I am the best guy he's ever fought. And, you know, my style of fighting, the fact that I can take guys down, you know, pretty effortlessly, and the pace that I can push is gonna make for like a fight of the night type thing with, you know, with his style. He's a guy that comes forward. You know, I'm a guy that comes forward. I move in and out a lot. And I'm a good MMA wrestler. So it's going to be a wild fight. I mean, I know that, you know, he's a tough kid. I'm a tough guy. We both have really good gas tanks. So there's going to be a lot going on in that fight.
I don't believe the betting odds have come out for this one, but I'm just guessing because of how highly touted he has been that you might be the underdog in this fight. Would that bother you at all?
No, actually, I kind of knew that going into this. I knew that I was going to be the underdog. You know, going into this fight, I planned on being the underdog. I didn't know what the odds were going to be. You know, even though we both have the same record, you know, we fought similar opponents, you know, being that he was fighting for Bama, a bigger organization, I knew that he trains out a bigger gym than I do. I knew that he would definitely have the favor in that category. And, I look forward to, making those odd keepers, you know, think twice before they make me an underdog again.
You talk about tendencies. How much of your training is just a self-evaluation and finding your own tendencies and getting rid of those tendencies?
So, I mean, everything I do is I really don't base so much of my fighting on my opponent. I did it when I was younger. I don't do that anymore. I really focus on myself. I mean, the only thing I can control is what I do in there, not what he does. You never know what a guy's going to do in the cage. You can have kind of a general idea, but ultimately, you know, you just got to sharpen the tools that you have. And I do that constantly, every single day, you know, whether it's, you know, coaches critiquing me or me critiquing myself. You know, most everything I do, I tape and then watch later. I know that sounds kind of weird, but it's really kind of what you have to do. I can see mistakes that I make, you know what I mean? I can, like, literally watch film of me hitting mitts or, you know, me grappling or, you know, me sparring. I can watch that film and I can go back home and kind of, you know, I kind of hear my coach in my ear, you know, while I'm watching it, like, oh, I should have done this. I should have done that. You know, and the first part of, you know, realizing you have a problem is, you know, is seeing it and admitting it. And then, you know, they go on fixing it. So I think that's something that's really helped me in my MMA career is that I am pretty critical, on myself, always. I know that there's always more to learn as a martial artist and that I can always get better.
Is there a point where you ever felt like you're too hard on yourself though?
No. I mean, I take the good with the bad. You know, there's things I feel like if I do something well, you know, I pat myself on the back for it. If I don't do something well, you know, I just try to fix it. I mean, it's all about, you know, I'm trying to build myself up. I'm trying to build myself up to be the best I can be. And I know that in order to do that, you know, I can't be my own best yes man. I don't want to be one of those guys that's uncoachable and thinks he knows everything. You know, because I've seen guys like that, and I know that those guys don't make bars. The guys that continue to adapt and learn and grow as an athlete, those are the guys that really make it. You know, I want to be one of those guys. I want to be one of those guys that every single fight I get better, and people see that and notice it. You know, I want to be that guy. I don't want to be the guy that's the same fighter in the beginning and the end of his career.
Of course, this fight's in Las Vegas. We just saw what happened last weekend. If you found out Adelaide Byrd was a judge for your fight, would that cause concern?
It would. And actually, I just read an article that said the athletic commission is kind of putting her on some kind of suspension.
Yeah, there was something I saw about that yesterday, but then
so
I
she's
saw,
not gonna be she's well, not gonna be on 216. I know that for sure.
Well, but then Bob Bennett came out and basically kind of didn't say that decision was made, so I'm not quite sure. But yeah. in throughout your career, have you ever monitored that? Of you know, maybe it's just you know going up in the Michigan regional scene where. Maybe there was, you know, referees or judges that you're just like, I just don't want that person working my fight.
Well, so I'm 15 and 1. I really, in my heart, know that I'm 16 and 0. There was a fight, and the fight that I lost, it was a close fight, but I mean, I clearly won. Definitely 2 out of 3, but I think 3 out of 3 rounds in that fight. Obviously, you know, going back, I wish I would have pushed harder for the finish. And that was my biggest mistake. But my biggest mistake was not paying attention to that. I mean, there were a couple guys that trained and actually one of them coached at a gym who, you know, it's kind of like a rival gym of mm-hmm. of the gym that I owned at the time, Michigan Top Team. So it was a real conflict of interest. And had I known that going in, you know, had I known who that was and I had paid attention to that, I would have known that. And I probably would have asked that person not to judge my fight or I would have done something. But, you know, It fell the way it did, and you know I learned from it, so I don't really take it as a loss.
In terms of that fight, was it the toughest thing? Was it mentally just getting over that?
Yeah, I mean it's one thing to go out and you know it's like being in the gym. You go in there and you know if you won or if you got your ass kicked. You know what I mean? And I can take an ass kicking like a man. I can get beat. And you're going to do it a lot in MMA. I mean, there's always going to be somebody that can kick your ass. I don't care who you are. You know, if you're the best guy in the world, you're going to have a bad day, and someone's going to get the better of you. And that's okay with me. I can deal with that because I can learn and grow from that. But winning a fight and actually losing it was definitely a whole different kind of mental experience. You know, that was pretty hard on myself just because I felt like I could have done more. But ultimately, you know, it definitely made me a better fighter. It did definitely put a little bit of a damper on my on the time that it took to get in the UFC. I think I would have been there a long time ago had I been, you know, undefeated, 10-0, 11-0. I would have been there. But you know, everything happened the way I knew it would, and I'm here now, so I make the most of it.
That's a tough thing because you know I was talking to another fighter recently. They said, you know what, if I didn't have that loss, maybe I get to the UFC. Quicker than I did, you know. It's just, I just hope that as time goes on, maybe there's more accountability, you know, for right. you know the judging aspect. Because and at the end of the night, if you get a bad scorecard, you get half your paycheck.
Yeah, I think that there should be some kind of a better appeal system, really. You know, the appeal system that's set up now, it's almost impossible to get a fight overturned. And then there's a lot of obvious. I mean, there's a lot of you don't have to be an MMA expert to watch some of these fights and go, no, that guy did not win that fight. And you hear about all the time. You even hear Dana White and, you know, the bigwigs of the UFC calling judges out like, hey, that was BS. That guy clearly won, which is really good. You know what I mean? Like they're trying to hold people accountable, but I think there should be a better, you know, like a secondary system. Okay. You lost the fight. Well, as soon as the fight's over, you know, maybe you knew you won that fight. There should be some kind of appeal system. And then that fight should kind of be in limbo until, you know, have maybe 15 more judges watch that fight, grade it unbiased, not knowing who wins, and then decide, and, you know, then make a decision from there. I mean, if 14 out of 15 say that, you know, that decision was wrong, I mean, obviously you got to overturn that. Should be some kind of a majority thing, but there's nothing like that in place. So, I mean, once those scorecards go in, that's fate. I mean, it's. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah, there is nothing you can do. But you've got your fight coming up here October 7th, UFC 216, taking on Tom Dukinwa. Good luck in the matchup. Another one, know where they can follow you at on social media.
So everything, all my social media is just Cody Stamann, CodyStamann. Yeah, I appreciate you taking time to interview me and look forward to putting a show on for everybody October 7th. It's going to be a wild night.
Great stuff there from Cody Stamann. Really looking forward to seeing that matchup against Tom Dukinwa at UFC 216 coming up on October the 7th there in Las Vegas. Now, later on in October is going to be a regional show here in the state of Florida. Battleground can be taking down place in South Florida. And one of the fighters that's going to be on that fight card is Caleb Williams. Now, if you're a listener to the Insiders Podcast, you may remember back in late last year, I did an episode of the Insiders Podcast with Caleb Williams the day after he got a win here in Tampa. And got a chance to catch up with him this week. And, you know, this is a fight card that's been delayed a couple times, and, you know, due to, you know, weather issues, venue issues, now taking place on October the 21st. So I had a chance to catch up with Caleb, talk to him about, you know, these fight, you know, the fight delays, also talk to him about Hurricane Irma, and also talk to him about how mentally he had to get over a decision loss that he clearly won. Joining me now here on the MMA Report on Radio Influence is Caleb Williams, who's got a fight coming up here October the 21st. Of course, Caleb, just like myself, lives here in Florida. So how did Hurricane Irma affect just everyday life for you?
Man, it was kind of rough. It was my first, like, real hurricane. Obviously, last year we had Matthew, which kind of was kind of big flop for at least us. It hit more north, but got home, we packed all my stuff, my valuables, and I moved them over to my girlfriend's house because her house is a little more sound than mine because I just rent. And we took off for Orlando on Thursday, well, like basically Friday morning, like 2 a.m. and weathered it out. Luckily, the gym didn't lose power, so got home. The house didn't take too much damage, and we still had power. So thankfully, you know, we lucked out pretty good.
Didn't I see a lot of the ATT guys just ultimately kind of just basically housed up at the gym?
Yeah, a lot of guys housed up the gym. I mean, especially a lot of people like the lost power went ended up going to the gym. Maybe they started somewhere else and they went to the gym because they lost power. We had a generator there in case, but they never lost power. But that thing's like a fortress. I mean, it's got impact windows, so, you know, it's concrete's mad thick on that thing. It's literally like a bunker.
Of course, I guess it's just one of the many issues you've had to deal with in the preparations for this fight. But before we even get there, your last fight, I watched the fight. I still don't know how you didn't win a clear dominating decision. But how do you mentally get past that? Of knowing where, you know, look, you know you won the fight. Everyone on your team knows you won the fight. But how do you mentally get past that?
You know what? I try to put it behind me. I try not to think about it too much. Obviously, I should have went out there. I should have finished the kid. It wasn't my best performance. You know, I'm still – it was only my second fight at 55 since I was an amateur. So I'm still kind of feeling out the weight class, still, you know, figuring things out. You know, things are a little different now that I'm not 45. At 45, I was so much bigger than everyone. But, like, I don't feel, like, weak at 55. It's just everyone's a little bit bigger. And, you know, it's not my first time. You know, I have three losses now that are all close decisions. You know, two of them, I don't know how that went the other way, but one of them was kind of close, hometown kid. But either way, like, it's not my first time. And it's not going to be the last time, you know, just the way judging and the way things are. Obviously, it's easier said than done. You know, people are always like, oh, that's why you don't leave in the hands of the judges. I try. It doesn't always happen. Sometimes you hit someone with everything you got and they're still standing. And then you're like, now what do I do? But I got right back to the gym. I didn't take any time off after that fight. I was just determined to, you know, just improve on any of the areas that I felt I missed in that fight, and just work on all the things to better my performance and make sure that when I go into a fight, I finish the guy, especially the guys that you should be finishing. I mean, there is no such thing as an easy fight. Every fight's, you know, obviously another guy's coming in there trying to, you know, break your face, you know, because obviously – hey, if you lose, you only get half a paycheck, and not everyone's cool with that. So just trying to improve in all the areas, make myself a better fighter, and definitely working out, filling out, you know, my frame a little bit better now that I'm at 55. And I think going into this fight, I think we got it down packed, and I think you're going to see a much better fighter come October 21st.
I guess judging has kind of come under this microscope because of what happened last weekend with Canelo, GGG. Have you ever found yourself where, whether it's yourself or your management, where you go to the commission prior to the fight to try to find out who is reffing and judging your fight?
Obviously, I always I pay more attention to the refs. I mean, the judges, it's kind of hard because the three times, you know, I've lost decisions, they're in different towns. I mean, two of them are in the same state, but they were so far apart that they probably weren't the same judges. I usually look at the refs. I mean, there's a couple refs that obviously I'm not going to name any names, but if I seen that they were about to ref my fight, I would ask for a new ref, which you have the right to ask for a different referee. Just say, I don't feel comfortable with that. But for the most part, I haven't had any problems with the refs and judging. I mean, I can take down names after a fight, you know, you kind of see who's judging. But I mean, even then, it's still the commission say, you never know. So I guess it's best to just train hard and finish the fight and not leave it to the handle. Or hopefully you can only pray that maybe they switch some things up, maybe make a better criteria for judges. I think, it should be a little harder to become a fight judge than, you know, cause I mean, I don't know. I know there's soccer moms that judge amateur fights. It's a weekend gig, you know, I get it. But there just needs to be more criteria. I think, you know, there should be a minimum of how much either you train, you fight, or you should have to go to classes that they teach about the different criteria of MMA or boxing. And you should it should be required like once a month at least, you know, twice. I think, you know, there's jobs like the military, you know, guys that are non-active that have to go to at least once a month, they have to go do training and stuff. So it should be the same thing with MMA judges, I think, you know, because it's not like a regular sport where you start 0-0 every year. You know, when that fight happens, you lose, you win, that's permanent. And that's people's careers, because those losses, you know, people don't realize, but one loss can set, you know, someone like me who's trying to get in a bigger show, that can set you back a year or more. You know, it doesn't matter who the opponent is, just a loss, period. Because like the bigger shows are looking for wins. They don't care who you're beating. You know, maybe they want that last, you know, couple tough fights and, you know, towards the end. But for the most part, they just want you to win and then progress. And so those losses set me back.
When you talk about the referees here in Florida, I think anyone who's watched regional action here in Florida, they know the referee that you're talking about. Because at the end of the day, as a fighter, you just want that referee consistent. If that referee is working one fight one way, another fight the other way, you really never know what you can expect in your fight, right?
Definitely. I mean, if it's one of those refs where like they let it go a little longer and they do it every time, that's fine. Or someone that stops it a little early, but they do it every time, that's fine. The consistency, when you do it like two completely different ways, like they do that same night, ref three fights and all three fights end and, you know, finishes. And maybe he lets it go three different ways. Maybe one time he lets the guy go sleep. Maybe one time he stops it super early. Yeah, it's one of those things. It's people can care about consistency more than, you know, perfect. Cause obviously, you're human. You're going to make, you know, mistakes. But if it's like one of those consistent things, that's fine. We can deal with it because then you know what to expect.
Of course, your fight here, it's been a long training camp preparing for this fight. And it was supposed to be in August and it was September. Now it's October. With the change in dates, how does that affect maybe the mindset of just going through a training camp?
Man, it is tough. I'm not going to lie. I've been in camp since early June, so I've had a pretty long camp. But I feel like it's all about listening to your coaches and having a schedule. So once it gets pushed, you have like a deload week where you kind of ease back, maybe whether you take the week off or you kind of just float through the week, easy stuff, and just kind of let your body recover, and then you slowly peak back up. You know, it's like it's almost like kind of a pyramid system. So it's you're able to re-peak, but you're not like consistently keeping that peak level, so your body recovers and doesn't crash. And honestly, I feel it sucks, I'm not gonna lie, but I feel like my body's the re-peaks, I feel better than I did, you know, like say like August 11th, I was peaking, and luckily at least it was like the week before, so I hadn't got into my serious cut. And then they got pushed to September 15th, and it's like, all right, I got six more weeks, so took a week off. Eased back into it, re-peaked, and I was going into that. You know, my weight was obviously good because I just kept my weight down. I didn't bloom back up. Felt even better. And I tell you, come October 21st, yeah, it's another 5 weeks, but we're going to be ready.
And Steven knew the opponent here. I'm familiar with Steven from Valor Fights. What's just a general synopsis of him as a fighter? What really sticks out to you?
I would say the best part probably of his game that I've seen is he's a decent grappler. He's got good grappling. He's good in the scrambles. He's got a couple of little slick tricks. He's aggressive on the feet. I wouldn't say that's his strength, but he's very aggressive and he's going to definitely bring it. He's not a slow starter. He goes right to it. I mean, so there's no feeling each other out. It's going to be right back to it. I feel, even in all the areas though, I'm not worried because I know that I train with guys 10 times his level and I'm right there, right hanging with them. And sometimes I'm beating them in practice. So I know he's going to be in for, some serious trouble in 5 weeks.
Have you started to think about the walkout song, what it might be?
You know what? Normally, my walkout song is like, I know exactly what it is, like early. And honestly, it's one of the songs, like, I listen to it, like, all the time. Just, I don't know, like, I listen to it a lot during training camp when I usually pick a song because I visualize my walkout. I just, like, I let it, like, kind of, like, pump through me. I keep motivated and just think about what I'm going to do. But, like, this camp, I haven't really settled on one. I have a couple. I'm having a hard time picking a good song because I'm like one of those people. I don't want to take a risk of going in with a song that someone else has got. Like, I usually like to pick something unique that no one else listens to. So, but I got 5 more weeks. So, we'll see. I'm still indecisive. You know, I walked out some Ted Nugent last fight, stranglehold. So we'll see what goes on though.
I know your Photoshop skills are pretty good. You know, I know, you know, you like to razz on your manager a little bit.
Oh, dude, I got it. You know, I was always told, like, if your friends don't mess with you, they don't care. So I wrestle with him all the time. But I just let everyone know, he might try to hide it, but he is a diehard Nickelback fan, all right? I stayed at his house. I seen the Shrine Room. He has a Chad Kroger poster, you know, and he's got all the gear. He's got memorabilia all over this room. It's kind of sickening. I'm not gonna lie. If I was Chad, I'd be scared if I seen David Arbello at one of his concerts.
Right when David hears us, you know he's gonna be calling you up and he's gonna be like, damn you. I had a good conversation with JD about that.
You know, sometimes me and JD joke around like, you know what, one of these days we're just gonna get one of our release forms. David's gonna have enough of this.
You know, maybe all of the, David's clients who are on this fight card, maybe they should all come off the Nickelback.
Yeah, you know, that's a possibility, you know.
I heard that rumbling.
Maybe even wear my romper, you know. I know he likes rompers.
And it's not say that Photoshop you sent me was pretty good.
You know, it's funny is I do that all on my phone, you know, when I'm sitting, anytime I'm sitting, I'm bored and we have so many group chats and we're all, you know, between us and some of the clients and Dave and, so I got to keep it up because it gets pretty savage in there.
Yeah,
I got to let them know not to mess with me. Otherwise, they're going to end up in a Photoshop they're not going to like.
Yeah, you got to give them a little bit of warning. But, of course, this is coming up here next month down in South Florida. Caleb, I appreciate you coming on the podcast. Anywhere where my listeners can follow you at on social media?
Instagram at CalebW145. Obviously, I got to switch it. I've been kind of lazy. I got to switch it now, 55. Twitter's... Caleb_ATT and then Caleb Williams MMA Facebook page.
And I really appreciate Caleb Williams coming on the podcast to talk about his fight coming up here October 21st at Battleground MMA. I had a chance to call the Battleground show back in April. Unfortunately, not going to be able to call their upcoming fight card as I will be. That weekend, I'll be up in Buffalo as the Bucks will be playing the Buffalo Bills. So looking forward to that one. Of course, I'll be up in Minneapolis this weekend. Minneapolis, I've always had a good time in Minneapolis. Last time we were up there, we got a chance to go to a Twins game. So looking forward to heading up there to be a part of the broadcast team for the Buccaneer Radio Network. Now, our final interview here on the podcast will be with a fighter that just signed with Bellator, and she has made the transition from boxing to MMA, or I guess you could say she's still doing both, because that is a plan. So I had a chance to talk to Anna Houlton. I had a chance to catch up with her and talk to her about a lot of things in MMA. It's about a 20-minute conversation we had where we talked about her decision to sign with Bellator. We talked boxing, Canelo, GGG, referee, judging, so much. And also we talked about Heather Hardy. We are now joined by the newest female signing of Bellator MMA. Anna, I appreciate you coming on the podcast. First off, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to me. I'm really excited.
Obviously, this news came out last week of signing with Bellator. I know you've done some interviews already talking about this, the fact of, you know, Bellator giving you those options of still boxing and also in MMA. Is ultimately that was the big sticking point of why Bellator was the place for you to come now?
Yeah, 100%. For combat sport athletes, I think it's a great opportunity. To me, it's a game changer, just being able to pursue both sports. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a lot of work. Obviously, they're two completely different games altogether, as we saw in Mayweather versus Conor McGregor. And, what I love about it is just being able to have that challenge, you know, sit in front of me every single day. And so I've noticed that just sticking with boxing and just practicing the art and staying in the sport for, you know, after for so long, you know, it can almost get dry a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. and just being able to just open up my eyes and stepping into like a wrestling room or going into jiu-jitsu and learning from and talking to people like Frank Mir, who's done so much for the sport of MMA. I mean, you know, it's just been mind blowing. So as a fighter and as a martial artist, you know, I feel like I'm living the dream, you know, and it's nice that Bellator is able to have that opportunity for someone like me, because activity is always great for fighters, and that's what Freddie would always say. He would always try to get me fights lined up when I first started training with them back in Wildcard. And so it's nice to, you know, kind of have that aspect, especially for my career, where I can not only get the activity but also the visibility and get some opportunities with more sponsorship and more viewership and stuff. So it's been awesome.
Is part of this journey at all thinking about maybe competing in the Bellator kickboxing ring?
I haven't thought that far ahead. Again, you know, it's they're all different. They're all so different. So I'm not looking forward to jumping into the kickboxing aspect right now, because I'm really digging the grappling part. I'm loving that, and I love just being able to connect the dots with, you know, what I've learned from the boxing, and also with my experience of having a black belt in Taekwondo and Kempo Karate, and just even competing in those. Yeah. And then all of a sudden just getting into the grappling game, just finding the lines between wrestling and jiu-jitsu, and see how, you know, they can complement each other in the cage, and how having all that complement to even the striking. So right there, that's pretty much my main focus right now. And I know if I jump into kickboxing, I mean, it's not going to be no walk in the park. So I'm just trying to keep it simple.
I've talked to MMA fighters that have, you know, who are working their way up the regional scene, who, you know, when they have the opportunity to take a boxing fight, they have taken a boxing fight. And I've talked to them about the biggest issues in transitioning from one sport to the other. For you, what was the biggest transition, from boxing to MMA? Is part of it just the mindset?
Oh, 100%. Oh, for sure. If anyone were to step into a boxing gym, you can already see that there's a certain culture, there's a certain tenacity that, you know, everyone has in there, whether you're a fighter, a coach, trainer, manager. I mean, it's just a different vibe altogether versus if you go to do an MMA gym or even like a jiu-jitsu school. It's completely different. And, I think one of the hardest things for me to figure out was just understanding my body, my capabilities, and what I can do in the sport of MMA. So a lot of it is not only just the physical aspects, but also just matching up with the right people. So I was real lucked out with just having my coach Angelo Reyes, who's just phenomenal and just exceptional at just talking. I mean, yeah, this guy, this man can explain things and bring it down to the T, you know? And what I love about it is that he was humble enough to actually, you know, step down and actually learn about all the different aspects of all the different martial arts, which he's been doing for a long time. For anyone who doesn't know Angelo's background, I mean, that's how I met him, is through my Kempo Karate days. And he has a background all in that. So he'd been watching the different arts for such a long time, and just being able to have the experience of working alongside with Frank Mir, and Frank Mir being a grappling specialist, you know, legend in that game, teaching Frank how to knock people the fuck out. And it's pretty cool to see how the whole landscape of the game works, not only with performance wise, but also just teaching and coaching wise. So I'd say that was the biggest thing that I had to learn, is just finding the right people who would say it to me where I can get it, and I don't have to devote like an extra 8-10 years of my life to just really understand it. Because I feel like if you're a specialist, let's say in jiu-jitsu, for instance, one of my partners, his name is Rain Fujishigi, and I hope I didn't say his last name incorrectly, but he's a brown belt in jiu-jitsu, and he's phenomenal at just explaining a lot of the fundamentals, a lot of the basics of jiu-jitsu, and because of that, I'm able to appreciate it. I'm like, wow, you know, this art is deep. There's so much that has brought into it, and I got to understand the history of jiu-jitsu, and it's just brilliant. And so, with that said, we'll go back and forth where we'll work on the we'll do some jiu-jitsu, we'll do some grappling, and then we'll mix it up and do some striking. And then, you know, what he's starting to see, and what we're all starting to see, that he already has a lot of the muscles developed just from jiu-jitsu that can already be reflected in even just boxing, if that makes any sense. Like fighting muscles, it's all there. It's just a matter of understanding, you know, what the goals are with each particular fight scenario. I'd say it's just more of the translation of the fight game and information that's, I think, is the biggest challenge, in my opinion.
Obviously, a huge part of combat sports is confidence. Did it take longer to get your confidence level where you wanted to be in boxing or MMA?
I would say probably MMA, mostly for the grappling aspect of it. I felt like having a martial arts background and transitioning into boxing, there's a lot of similarities to it, and I was able to pick it up a lot more. The dialogue is a lot more similar. And with that said, I mean, I after I turned pro in about 2 years, I ended up winning my first world title, where I was an 8-1 underdog. I only have 4 wins under my belt, obviously with an amateur background, but my opponent had over 41 wins and was considered a legend in the sport in my weight class. So I felt like my confidence level in that aspect was definitely a lot higher than transitioning into MMA. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I really believe that there's a lot of use and can be super effective in the cage. It's a matter of understanding how the game works and just knowing the correct distancing and the correct timing points, and understanding the whole pace of the MMA game. So, I was low key for the past couple of years. I really immersed myself in the grappling arts, just inquiring a lot, doing a lot of the mat time, and with just being able to step back a little bit and just kind of have fun with it all over again. I'd say my confidence level right now is a lot higher, because I'm like, wow, yippee, I'm in a world full of just martial arts. And like, I can't complain, because it's something that I've always been wanting to do, even when I was a child. You know, I've been doing like horse dances with my dad instructing me to do it when I was 5 years old. So, you know, decades later, here I am, you know, I'm making a living off of it. So it's just been awesome.
I know you have mentioned about looking for a fight with Heather Hardy. Of course, she's in Bellator as well. Also, she's made the transition from boxing to MMA. She's kind of alluded to the fact of part of that is financially. It's easier for her to get the type of money she wants in MMA as opposed to boxing. Let's say this fight does happen. Let's just say in the next 12 months. Is it in a boxing ring or is it in the Bellator cage?
Oh, man, it doesn't even matter. And that's the brilliance behind Bellator, is that they give you the option to do both. And, you know, I'm you know, I respect Heather, but, you know, I feel bad for her that she had to say that MMA actually pays her more than her boxing. Because in my boxing days, even without even having a title fight, like, it took care of me pretty well. Like, I had a phenomenal boxing promoter in Alan Tremblay, where he really taught me a lot of the business aspect of it. Is you can't only be good in the ring, but you also have to know the landscape of how all the different promoters work, how the TV networks work, how the sponsorship works, and things like that. And things start to add up, you know what I mean? So, you know, I'm sorry she had to go through that, because, you know, it is tough. The combat sports lifestyle is very unforgiving, and it's People need to take a note or two on just having some business 101. You know what I mean? So, and plus having a matchup with me and her, I mean, come on, let's go and make some money. If you want to make more, if you're happy that MMA is giving you more money, then, you know, let's do something together. And I'll tell you what, over in boxing, fighters make a lot more money when they fight another namer. You have Canelo and end up having the name that he has now. Had he not fought Floyd Mayweather, Triple G wouldn't have the name that, or wouldn't have been able to get the paycheck that he got had he not fought Canelo. And obviously Conor McGregor wouldn't have the $100 million paycheck that he got off of fighting Floyd Mayweather. You know what I mean? So I have a name, I have a brand, I have a demographic. Heather Hardy, she has the same thing too. And I think this is something that the fight fans would love to see. And who want to see two strikers, you know, go battle it out in the cage, you know? You want to see some knockouts? I'd say there's your match. Anything can happen in boxing too. So either way, you know, I'm a disciplined in the fight game. I train all year round. You know, I'm good to go. So, I'm ready to go, and all I need to do is have people just talk about it. So yeah.
Ideally, when would you like to make your Bellator debut?
honestly, like ASAP, man. It's been so crazy, Jason. Like I've been training consistently, man. Like just to give you any idea, like I'm close to weight. Weight's not even gonna be an issue for me. So I've been talking with Rich Chu, the VP over at Bellator, and he's been so instrumental with getting my signing, but also talking with me and my team in terms of trying to get a fight set up. And I understand, you know, the Bellator roster, it's huge. There's so many fighters that need to, you know, get their activity going on. And, you know, they've been there before I have. And, you know, I'm patient and waiting, but I'm also letting them know that I'm ready to go. So, you know, if there happens to be some a fight that falls out, you know, I'm the girl that you can call, because, you know, it's I don't know, that's just how the fight game is, you know. Like Manny Pacquiao, for instance, like one of my idols in boxing, like he ended up winning world titles just off of being a last minute opponent. I mean, people in broadcast couldn't even say his name correctly, you know what I mean? And look at it now, he's like he's a household name. So it's just how the whole industry works, and I'm aware of it, and you know, I'm prepared for it.
Let's just hypothetically were to say, October 20th, Heather Hardy opponent pulls out of that fight. Are you on the phone immediately telling Rich and Scott, sign me up? Man, I want that fight.
Oh, let's get it going. Let's get it going. It's like, we need to have a promotional team. I was like, what better promotion is better than having a last minute opponent? Someone like me who's been asking for a fight with someone like Heather Hardy, even back in boxing, you know, for a past couple of years. It's like, I'm ready to go. Let's go and do this. There's no problem on our side. So it's actually a fight that we had asked Rich originally, but you know, it just didn't work out, you know. So someone from their side didn't want to make it happen. So if that ends up happening, you know, that's just how the fight game goes. You know, you got to be ready. So one thing I did notice, the difference between MMA and boxing is that in boxing, you know, you can because there's so many different businesses that need to align together, like the promotions, the management, the fight teams and everything like that you can somehow build your opponent before, or your fighter to have opponents to build their craft, build their skill before they start having a big mega fight. In MMA, you can't do that. There's too many ways to win, too many ways to lose. And that's what I love about the sport, is that there is no such thing as a set of fight. You got to be ready at all times. I mean, how many times have we seen so many upsets in MMA? Brandon Renau ends up getting over dethroned by TJ Dillashaw, right? Ronda Rousey got dethroned by Holly Holm, and Holly Holm gets dethroned by Miesha Tate. You know, there's so many factors that go into the game, and it's so compelling. And I think that's something that, you know, fighters and fight fans alike can really enjoy. And so, you know, if that ends up happening October 20th, you know, Anna Houlton's right here. I'm right here.
I want to end on this note. Obviously, you mentioned about the Canelo GG fight, and not really to talk about the fight, but kind of the aftermath of the fight with obviously the scorecard of Adelaide Bird. And, you know, one of the things that I've always talked about that ultimately surprises me is that more fighters are not proactive about finding out in advance who the referee and who the judges are in case there may be any issues. Like, I live here in the state of Florida, and there is a referee here that a lot of fighters don't want working their fight because he's just not consistent. It's either an early stoppage, a late stoppage, and there's no, like, consistency. For you, have you ever looked into who is working your fight and ever maybe, you know, went to your promoter and says, I have an objection of that person working my fight?
Oh, man, that's a great question. I remember one of my first lessons in boxing is that someone told me that boxing is a parallel to life. So, no matter how hard you try to get something to go on, there's always going to be another force that's going to get in the way. I mean, that's just how life is, you know what I mean? So I think if anyone wants to get more answers in that of how to deal with something like that, I'd say take a page out of Floyd Mayweather's book of his whole career. I mean, this guy, talk about not only being a beast in the ring, he was a beast in business, where he was able to calculate all different things, whether it was dealing with the commission, the gloves, the contracts, the TV deals, you know, it was all there, you know what I mean? But with that said, you still got to be a fighter at the end of the day. So if I were to talk about Andre Ward versus Kovalev on the fight, it was a rough fight. A lot of low blows, you know, whatnot were happening. We're not being called. I'll tell you what, you know, you got to deal with it. It's not like I haven't been in fights where, you know, it was really dirty and really grimy and there's a lot of cheating going on. But you just got to come out there and you got to do your job. You know what I mean? So it's a... The fight sports is a whole different beast and altogether, and it's very important to be aware of what's at stake, and then just know how what you're gonna do once you're in that position. One of my good friends and old stablemate back at Wildcard Gym is Paulie Malignaggi, and I got to hang out with them during the whole Mayweather McGregor fiasco with my coach Angelo Reyes. And yeah, it was definitely a lot of laughs, man. But it was so educational in the sense of being able to see Pauly behind the scenes and how he was able to carry himself. This guy is a professional, and he was able to separate the two. But one of the things that he'd say, and it stuck with me, is that, you know, as a fighter, you got to know exactly who you are and exactly who you're not. So with that said, you got to have, you know, things have to be defined in your mind, and the fight game has to be defined in your mind, and you got to know exactly how everything works. You know what I mean? So with that said, you know, scorecards are scorecards. And there's an old saying with, you know, once you get into that ring or if you get into that cage, never leave it up to the judges. So it's something that once you step into the fight game, that's something you have to be well aware of. And it's not like, you know, we as fighters don't have the ability to do something about it. Mike Tyson would just go in there, just knock people the fuck out, you know. So it's all relevant, you know. It all depends. And if anything, I think it's good for Canelo and Triple G to actually have this drama stir up, because it gets people a lot more emotionally invested into it. People will say, oh, that's the last time I'm going to watch a pay-per-view fight. I mean, people were saying that shit back when Mayweather and Pacquiao fought, and people are still buying these pay-per-views, you know? It draws people in, and, you know, if I was in that situation with Canelo Triple G, you know, I'd a year ago, I'd probably be like, oh, man, you know, I'd be devastated, you know, if versus like right now. I mean, if anything, it's a good thing. It can actually lead up to a bigger payday. I mean, not saying that these guys didn't have a big payday already, but can you imagine even getting more? So I can go on and on about it. I just love talking about the fight game. So you got me hyped up, Jason.
I will tell you, the thing that I found most interesting, because I went out to a bar here in Tampa to watch that fight, I walked in, thought it would be a very pro Canelo crowd, and it was not. It was a very pro GGG crowd, which I was pretty. I just didn't expect that.
Who were you rooting for?
I was probably GGG, just because I love his fighting style. I just I love it. But you know, I was more just. I love big fights, and I love fights that get people excited, and. It was a fight that, I mean, everyone was into. It was great. I mean, at the end of the day, I just want to sit down and watch a great fight. You know, there's times there's fights that you just sit there, you're like, man, that just sucked. But I don't know. I mean, take the scorecard aspect out of it. How could you not have loved that fight?
Right. No, 100%. Classic already.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, and look, we'll see when that rematch does happen. I'm guessing 2018. I can't see December as a likelihood.
Yeah, not with the type of fight that they had. It was too intense. So yeah. It was very physical, mentally taxing. Yeah, they definitely need a break, in my opinion, before they get right back on it.
But of course, we're looking forward to seeing when you do make that Bellator debut. We'll wait and see when that happens. But let all my listeners know where they can follow you out on social media. Maybe if they want to ask you a question about the fight game, they can reach out to you.
Oh yeah, for sure. I love being able to have questions like that and have some answers or a possible debate going back and forth. I love that. But anyway, you can find me at Anna Hulton. Just plug in my name. It's spelled AnnaJulaton. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and yeah, you know, let's get some debates going on.
Great stuff there from Anna. I felt like I probably could have had another 20 or 30 minute conversation with her just talking about the fight game. So definitely going to have to get her on the podcast down the road whenever she does make her Bellator debut. I want to thank all my guests coming on this week's podcast. Patricky Pitbull, Lorenz Larkin, Justin Lin, Cody Stamen, Kayla Williams, and of course just heard from Anna there. So I appreciate all those fighters coming on this week's episode of the podcast. We talk about their upcoming fights and what is going on in their career. Of course, if you ever missed any of my interviews, they are posted on the MMA Report YouTube channel, so be sure to check out that. But I want to finish up this week's podcast by talking about two questions that got sent to me on social media. And first up, Brian Abraham asked, how far can Gokhan Saki go in the light heavyweight division? Of course, Saki coming into the UFC this week at UFC Fight Night Japan. And really, Brian, it's a tough question to answer right now just because I think there's just a lot of unknowns about what Saki can do in the UFC. I mean, obviously with his striking, maybe right now, maybe top 10 is maybe where he can go. But, you know, ultimately, I think, we have to see how he fights on Friday night. And then after that, I think we can really kind of look into what his ceiling is in the light heavyweight division. But right now, it's just kind of a tough question to answer. But I think, Brian, that's definitely going to be something that myself and Daniel Gavon will discuss next Monday on the post-fight podcast. Of course, now the post-fight podcasts do come out on Monday with it being the football season, and I'm working on Sundays with the Buccaneer Radio Network. But, Brian, that's a great question and definitely something that Daniel will probably end up discussing that question on the pre-fight and the post-fight show. So I appreciate that. Also, Dirty Bird 212 sends in a question, said, and this is a football-related question, which you listen to this podcast, you know how much I'm a big fan of football. I'm a football junkie. And he says, how far can the Dolphins go with Jay Cutler? They're looking good. Yeah, I actually had a chance to watch a little bit of the Dolphins game on Sunday. Actually got to fire up the game pass and start kind of looking at some other teams, because obviously I'm so in tune to what's going on with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Obviously, we'll play the Miami Dolphins later on this year. But, yeah, you know, I think the Dolphins, it's going to be interesting. One of my best friends is a big Dolphins fan, and we were out on Tuesday night at the Lightning game, and we were talking about that. And, you know, he kind of would like to see them air it out a little bit more with Jay Cutler. But, you know, it's, you know, obviously I think that's a team that's going to probably go as far as Jay Ajayi takes them. I mean, when you look at a Dolphins team, there is a lot of offensive talent on that team. But I think ultimately it comes down to Jay Ajayi. I mean, that to me is how far that team is going to go. We'll see exactly how far the Dolphins can go. And, you know, look, they're in a tough division. I mean, pretty much, you know, in that division, you're playing for a wild card spot. Obviously that's the Patriots division, and, you know, definitely don't see them going down, you know. So, I mean, they're actually, I think I saw they're a 13-point favorite this week, the Patriots are, against the Texans, and the Dolphins have the Jets. And, of course, the Jets, obviously, you know, not going to be a very good year for them. But Dirty Bird 212, I do appreciate the question. Of course, I'll be in Minneapolis this weekend as the Bucks are going to be taking on the Minnesota Vikings. The first time I have the opportunity to go to the brand new Viking Stadium. So looking forward to checking out that stadium. I think pretty much I've been to, I think about every stadium in the league. I don't think there's one. I mean, obviously the new, Chargers and Rams obviously haven't been there, but everywhere else I've been to. So looking forward to checking out the new stadium. Always have a good time in Minneapolis. Usually go to the downtown area, have dinner, and with the friends down there. So looking forward to heading up to Minneapolis. Always good to go to Minneapolis when it's not freezing cold, being a Florida boy. So I've got that coming up this weekend. Also, I got sent this tweet on the other day, and it was a tweet from Sean Strickland. I don't know if you may have seen this or not, but it was from USADA to the UFC fighters, and it was a survey, and Sean just did a screenshot of one question, and the question was this: USADA is considering a new system to track the whereabouts of athletes. Under the system, you would need to file your whereabouts only once or twice a year and would allow the new system to track your location through a mobile phone application. If this system was adopted, how likely would you be to use the application? Very likely, likely, neutral, not likely at all. Sean Strick, not likely at all. And also put in never going to happen in all caps. And, having the conversation with DemSpace, who does a great job covering USADA, one of the things that he said, is that the athletes of today are paying for what the athletes of yesterday did. And one of my issues with the USADA anti-doping policy with the UFC fighters is that it was not collectively bargained. And I think if it was collectively bargained, things would be a little different. So basically you're asking, USADA is asking the athletes, basically, can we GPS monitor you? I mean, let's be honest about it. That's what that is. I don't see any way in hell that the fighters are going to agree to that. But, obviously USADA wants to know where these athletes are to go out and test them, and we'll see what happens there. Of course, the John Jones USADA hearing could happen as early as the next 30 days or so. And, of course, last week, after I had recorded the podcast, it did come out that, John Jones was officially stripped of the UFC light heavyweight title and that Daniel Cormier has been reinstated as the UFC light heavyweight champion. And, I said this last week on the preview podcast when we talked about the whole John Jones situation. I would really like to see the UFC do something special at light heavyweight, because this is, Daniel Cormier, great fighter, great guy. You don't really hear anybody say anything bad about him, but he has not shown to be a pay-per-view draw. When I'm talking pay-per-view draw, you got to be drawing over 400,000 buys. Only time Daniel Cormier has shown to be a pay-per-view draw is when he's been fighting John Jones. So I would really like to see the UFC do something special. Maybe it's kind of like do a four-man tournament to determine who's going to fight Daniel Cormier. Because, Daniel Cormier has pretty much come out and said he doesn't plan to fight until 2018. So, you kind of look at that, top five in the UFC light heavyweight division. And, I guess you could say, Alexander Gustafsson would be the clear number one contender right now. I mean, I think you could say that, but I mean, look, you can make the, I think you can make the case for Volkan Ozdemir just because of, looking for a fresh challenger. After Volkan, then it's kind of, if Shogun would have been fighting this weekend, then maybe he would have put himself into that conversation as well. Obviously Jay Mann was coming off loss. Glover's, had his struggles. So, I would really like to see the UFC just do something special, to kind of get people, maybe more invested in Daniel Cormier. I think that's gotta be the key thing. I think Gustafsson, Ozdemir as the number one contender makes a lot of sense. Put that as a main event of something, or maybe a co-main event of a pay-per-view. And then, and have Daniel Cormier on the commentary. Try to help build up Daniel Cormier a little bit. Obviously, people know the name Daniel Cormier, but ultimately, you got to make him into a pay-per-view draw. So we'll see what happens there. But that is going to wrap it up for this week's episode of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, I really do appreciate if you subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on all the various podcasting platforms, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or Google Play. I really do appreciate that. If there's anybody you want to hear on this podcast, you know, shoot me a tweet at Jason_Floyd. That's another way. Yeah, you can send me questions, comments, whether it's this show, the pre-fight show, or the post-fight show. If you want to send maybe a longer form question or comment in, you can email me, jason@radioinfluence.com. Again, that's jason@radioinfluence.com. I know, you know, I have a couple of listeners that always like to do that, so I do appreciate those questions and comments that do come in. And, of course, coming up on Friday, myself and Daniel Galvan, we will have a preview podcast for UFC Fight Night Japan and Bellator 183. Really looking forward to that Bellator card coming up on Saturday night. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's episode of the MMA Report podcast, which you hear every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
I'm Jerry Petuck, CEO of Radio Influence. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on any of our programming, or if you have some show ideas you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you take time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means more than you could ever know. Without you, the listener, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to all of our programming. You can find all of Radio Influence's programming on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.